If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 172. We're calling this one Weekend Updates because this is the second show this week we've done. And let us know if you like the 30-minute format versus our usual hour, hour and 15 format. I don't know that some topics have to go that long because we just want to be done with them. But other times when we're given blipverts here in the middle of the week, we can do a shorter, you know, 15 to 30-minute thing. So the big news that I want to talk about that's happened since Monday is Bill and Melinda Gates are getting divorced. Who'd have thunk that some asshole billionaire and his wife, who's almost 10, well, who is 10 years younger than he is, might get divorced?
The rest of America would like to divorce Bill Gates, too.
I know. I know. And that's, I'm being kind of somewhat facetious, but typically, if you look at people who are in the public, they never stay married. I don't know.
What I find fascinating about this story is the fact that they didn't have a prenup.
I know. Back in the day, but
I mean, that's odd.
Did you see the memeable Microsoft video where they're dancing to the Rolling Stones, and it's like looks painful for Bill Gates, but Steve Ballmer and all them kind of get it. Do you think he might have a little bit, maybe a little Asperger's, maybe he's a little bit on the spectrum? And something like that might not have occurred to him because of that. But I agree. You'd think you're getting married to somebody. You're the CEO and major shareholder in even at that time.
A major company.
Your lawyers aren't going to go, hey, we think you should peruse this prenup. I do feel bad. I mean, I don't feel bad for Melinda and Bill Gates. I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on, but you kind of know when you're marrying somebody who is fanatical about something or can become fanatical. Again, another thing that happens when you're on the spectrum. You become obsessed with things. And I should know. My son is on the spectrum, and there are obsessions that, although he's a geek like I am, sometimes they get annoying to me even. And, but, you know, he's worth $146 billion. And she's asked for no spousal support, supposedly. Well, I wonder why, because in Washington it is also a 50-50 state, like it is here in Ohio. And so I'm assuming she's going to get a chunk of change. But I do feel for their kids. It's tough, particularly because the oldest Gates daughter is 27 years old, and my parents, when they divorced, I was almost out of college. I was 20, 21, something like that. It's tough when you make it that far. Your parents, you know, my parents were married for 25 years. They're married for 27. To see something like that happen, because at that point you think
27 years is an awfully long time.
It is. But I don't know, the fact that she's 10 years younger than he is, he's in his 60s and she's in her 50s, I have a feeling that they both had some hobbies that they wanted to pursue. You know?
I got nothing for that.
Yeah. It is what it is. But it is the news of this week.
That is
and
true.
And it flies right into the other thing that happened. Again, where Microsoft is going to pivot its business. I'm starting to make my predictions within the next 3 years. Apple's pivoted its business. Everybody, Apple's always the first to pivot when they find the technology is good. I think you're going to see Microsoft pivot to ARM in the next 3 years as their majority system. Because, again, ARM gives them more control over the hardware, which is where they're having problems with customer experience, you know, and pushing all kinds of patches and everything else. But, you know, ARM version 9 is also going into the server space in a big way. ARM's been in the server space for a while, for a long while, but ARM version 9 and their new N2 chips can have 128 cores on a chip with specialized processors to do other kinds of things like AI, audio, you know, all kinds of things that are included in that, and they can be air-cooled. So think of how much more densely you can pack a data center and how much less energy you're going to use. And that's a big thing, as the, you know, even for the computing industry, which is a major part of making sure that everybody can go green, is how can we make these data centers greener? Intel is in serious, serious trouble. Their roadmap just isn't going to help them. They're going to have to fundamentally change what they do or get left behind.
I guess they'll be left behind.
I think they will too, because, again, AMD and their amazing EPYC and Ryzen and Athlon products, faster, better graphics, lower power, more cores, you know, that follows. So the people who are going to stay in that x86 market are going to be AMD, you know, will eventually move to AMD. Now, the thing that AMD suffers from is the same thing that NVIDIA suffers from right now. And NVIDIA at their GTC announced that they were developing ARM9, that's the current generation, ARM9 processors, for their own servers, so that they could integrate their GPUs with an ARM processor for AI and ML work, that's artificial intelligence and machine learning, for those of you who don't know the lingo. But I think that also puts another nail in Intel's coffin. You know, now Intel owns, like I've said before, Intel has, they've bought so many companies to buy all these technologies, and they don't really know how to integrate them together, but they've kept them. So they could go other directions, you know.
But that's just it. Intel is one of those companies that doesn't know how to innovate. They don't know how to diversify. They've done it, but they've not done it successfully.
No. They've largely become what everybody always claimed Apple to be, which yes. is a marketing company. But that's exactly what Intel has become.
Now, IBM diversified and became a finance company.
Yes.
If Intel were to diversify to that degree, they might survive. But sticking in technology is not a, it's not a good look for them.
But going back to what I was saying before, where AMD and NVIDIA have issues is their ability to leverage the foundries to actually get product in volume. You know, Apple, you know, and when you talk, Steve Jobs was a visionary. He knew a lot about business. He knew a lot about technology. He knew a lot about psychology and sociology, and he knew a lot about supply chain. I think he had a lot of foresight, and he knew how to build a team to put around him. And so he had a lot of foresight when he made Tim Cook CEO after his death, or before his death, when he was forcibly retired because of his illness. That, I think, largely is what's kept Apple's business afloat. They have lots of very, very, very talented engineers, and there were people who, like Jonathan Ives, who, to a large degree, did the visionary piece along with him and have been able to keep that going. But I don't think, if it weren't for the fact that Tim Cook understands how the business world operates and how supply chain works, and that Apple could continue to innovate the way they are. Because right now, you can't buy AMD video cards. You can't buy the high-end Ryzen processors or EPICs unless you're an OEM. And you can't buy AMD, NVIDIA? You can't buy NVIDIA, you can't buy AMD graphics cards either. And why is that? Well, it's because because of all the things that use chips now, whether it's a car or your refrigerator or your pair of tennis shoes or whatever, there's not enough fabs in the world to build them. Now, that's one thing. There is a fab in the United States owned by Intel in New Mexico. If they started doing contract fab work like TSMC does in Taiwan, you know, where they don't produce their own product, but they have the foundries to produce products like Apple socks, designed by Apple, or ARM chips designed from the ARM Foundation, or ARM chips, from NVIDIA, they could make more money than they're probably making now with a lot less headaches. But I don't think, bringing Pat Gelsinger back to Intel to be its CEO, that is not, to me, that's like putting retread tires on your car. You're going to drive along, it's going to seem okay, drive for a while, and then the rubber's going to peel off the outside of that tire, and Intel's going to be in bad straits. And you'll know it'll happen. It'll start with Intel starting to sell off some of the businesses that they bought over the years. That it always starts that way, because they're trying to fix that bottom line. And the business they should sell off first, or the business they should give up, which is their core chip business, is probably the one that they'll keep till the end, because we're Intel. This is what we do. So I don't know if you've had a chance to watch The Bad Batch.
I did.
So of all the new Star Wars properties, with the exception of The Mandalorian, I was really impressed with The Bad Batch. I always liked the Clone Troopers cartoons, and it was interesting. And what I like about it is it kind of provides a little bit better continuity than the other cartoons like Star Wars Rebels and Rebels was the one that was in between A New Hope and Order 66. But since this takes place immediately after Order 66, it provides some continuity to that story that seems to smooth it out some. And I like the direction that they took the characters to. That these soldiers were not conditioned because of the genetic things that they had changed about them so that they could express almost superpowers, that they had a mind of their own, Now, it's terrible that they're like rebel. Well, they're not rebels.
They're in a gray area for now.
Yeah.
What they ultimately become will be, I think, what defines them.
Mm-hmm. But I was very impressed. If you get the chance, the first episode is an hour long, which is really odd for one of their animated series, even for a pilot.
It seemed long to me.
Well, it was an hour and 9 minutes, actually.
I was like, wow, it seemed to run long to me.
Yeah, I mean, you could see where it could have been made into two parts, an episode one and an episode two. And I think it might have been written that way, but they decided to present it as a single unified story, which I was actually pretty happy about. The other thing that I really enjoyed about it, excuse me a minute, it's springtime here, that I really enjoyed about it was the fact that the animation quality went up a notch, like way up, compared to even Rebels, which isn't that old. But the textures on them, they still use the same angular drawing or artistic style, But the textures on things, the colors, like when the shock troopers, the clone troopers, the shock ones that have the red panels on their armor, it wasn't a solid red color like it had been in every other Clone Wars era. It was, you could tell it was modeled and it had marks in it where they had been in combat and all kinds of stuff. It was really cool when they did such a phenomenal job. My curiosity is if that was not part of Pixar helping them do that. Because it's definitely, that's digital animation versus hand-drawn.
What's interesting is that's Dave Filoni continuing to learn. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm not a big adult cartoon fan to begin with. I don't watch The Simpsons. I don't watch Family Guy. You know, I'm not a cartoon guy. If it weren't for the fact that this is Star Wars, I wouldn't watch it at all.
Yeah. same for Lower Decks. If it weren't for Star Trek. But, I mean, Lower Decks is more tongue-in-cheek. Which the original Clone Wars cartoon was, because they had that play between Anakin and Obi-Wan. But what I found amazing in the comparison is Lower Decks, the animation quality is more that hand-drawn animation type that, you know, we would see in after-school cartoons and G.I. Joe and Transformers and things like that when we were kids. And the Bad Bunch, its animation type is more like a very, very high-end anime. You know, it's not that they do the anime thing where all the characters have big eyes and narrow faces and things like that, because they definitely have their own art style. With that, like I said, that angular art style, you know, where you see the cheekbones are all straight on the characters and things, but with the colors and the textures and the almost natural poses of the animated characters is more reminiscent of a very high-end anime than it is like Lower Decks is. Lower Decks is got that 2D animation thing going with a little bit of pseudo 3D in the background where they layers to create depth, but you know, the characters all have round, soft faces and you know, there's no detail on the hands, like you can't see the fingernails and stuff, and all of that is detailed in Bad Bunch. So far I really enjoyed the pilot, and I recommend everybody watch it.
I will reserve judgment.
You always reserve
judgment. But I usually do. I mean, one episode doth not make a series for me.
No, I mean, the writing can be terrible on the next end of it. Which is a Disney thing that goes on.
Out of everything that could possibly go wrong, the fact that Dave Filoni is still running it tells me that won't happen.
Yeah.
But so far for me, it's the story that will keep me watching it.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. Would I have preferred it to be live action? Yes.
It would have been totally awesome as live action. But the question you would have there, it's one of those things. One of the flaws of The Mandalorian, and part of this is because I live with my son on the spectrum, who is a visual communications major in college, and so he does digital animation and he does digital video and compositing and as well as graphics arts and stuff. And we'll watch something and he'll go, "Can you see the fuzzy edge? It bugs me where the live-action filming has to be put against a green screen and then they composite across that green screen with the background." to get the bigger scenes. While it's possible to do live action and then use compositing, digital compositing to do that today, I think that's, we talked about this before, Paramount built that new set for the Star Trek series, which is basically a giant, very high-end, high-resolution LCD screens to do all the background compositing in a lot of scenes, so that there's this, instead of the green screen and having that fuzz or tearing at the edge of the objects that have the green screen behind them, they can get much higher quality film or you know, technique, I guess filming technique to make it, you know, you make it more believable, because that's part of the problem. Some people can't help but notice those details, and some people, they'll never notice the detail. And those types of things are, that's where it, you know, it breaks the suspension of disbelief, and folks can't you know, get into it. It's the same thing. The same problem happens on almost all their MCU live action shows. If you become aware of it, you then start, even unconsciously, start to look for it, and you're like, oh, I see where that happens.
That's why I watch these things twice. Once for just being a fan, and then the second time for this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's, if you don't watch this stuff because you're a fan, why are you watching it?
True. So, I think we'll leave it at that. And let us know via feedback to gizmosapiens@gmail.com whether you like the new shortened format. Maybe do a couple short shows a week as opposed to one longer show or whatever. Our goal is to hit at least 200 episodes by December. And we're at 172, so that means we have to record 28 episodes in the next 6 months, which I don't think we will miss. And that also includes, we'll have some video episodes too that will be up on the Gizmo Sapiens YouTube channel. You can search for Gizmo Sapiens on YouTube, and you'll be able to see our old fat butts present to you. So I guess we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.